Management Resource have come to order at 4:13 on the 5th of February. We have with us today Senator Stedman, Senator Stevens, Senator Green, Senator McGuire, and myself, Charlie Huggins. The purpose of our get-together today is educational and to expand our horizons about regulatory business. And we have two experts that have some tenure in doing that. And our focus is multi-agency-wise based on what you look like. But I think it would be of particular interest to the committee as it applies to natural gas. Cook Inlet is the parameter of interest, and we could go forward there. If you put yourself on the record, we'd be okay. Prepared to hear your testimony. Senator Wilkowski and Senator Wagner are out flying around someplace trying to make it into Juneau.
Okay. All right.
Senator Dice, would you like to join us up here? Please.
And
we have two seats. Who else?
Senator Thomas.
Hey, yeah, Senator Thomas. I'm sorry, I didn't see you. Come on up. We got two empty seats. Please join us. Anybody else out there that I'm missing? Okay, let's proceed. We're running behind. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of Senate Judiciary, my name is Kate Guyard. I am the chairman of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Beside me is Commissioner Tony Price. We are two of five RCA commissioners, and we have been asked by Senator Huggins to come to you and talk to you about NSTAR natural gas contracts, the RCA approval process, pricing terms, and consumer impact. We are aware that you have heard from your constituents about the increases in the prices of natural gas in Cook Inlet in South Central Alaska. We also know that you have very likely heard about the RCA's recent rejection of the NSTAR's contract with Marathon. And so we come to you today to talk to you about what has happened in Cook Inlet that has both contributed to the increasing costs that your constituents are bearing and our ultimate decision to reject the Marathon contract. When we do that, we are going to touch upon several, almost all, gas users and gas suppliers in Cook Inlet because NSTAR contracts touch upon the very issues of supply and demand that have affected Cook Inlet. And so when we talk about an NSTAR contract, we cannot help, or when we adjudicate an NSTAR contract, we also look at an enormous record of data about Cook Inlet itself.
Thank you. Can you get by?
The purpose of today's presentation, also in part, is to engage you in a discussion on Cook Inlet to the extent that we can provide you with an understanding of the data that's presented to us in a hearing. It's a little bit different from what you get in your hearing process. We take a record and have experts come to us, but they're also cross-examined by different parties. So any expert that comes before us to give testimony is cross-examined generally by someone else who has a very different financial interest. So cross-examination takes place very much like it would in civil court. And commissioners also have the ability to ask questions of all the expert witnesses. What happens at the end of the day is that you get a record that has been pretty much subject to scrutiny, and that's the record we base our decisions on. This is our outline that I'll do my very best to follow today. You know me, most of you, and you know that I'm not very good at following outlines, and so Commissioner Price will knock me on the knee when I need to get back to the subject matter. We're going to give you a very slight overview of the RCA. We're going to talk about the approval process at the RCA, the contracts, some considerations. That's my way of telling you there are things that I want to talk to you about that are just general information for you to have. I want to talk to you a bit about the contract with Marathon, and then I'll address any questions that you have. And Mr. Chairman, do you want to have questions as we go? Whatever you like.
Yes.
Okay. Very well. I put this in a picture of the commissioners so that you can have an understanding of who we are I left my picture out because I had blonde hair at the time. The first is Dave Harbor. He has a master's degree and background in natural resource industry. Mark Johnson is an attorney. He has a bachelor's degree in economics. Tony Price, Commissioner Price, is a CPA. He has an enormous background in debt and financial instruments and capital markets. Jan Wilson, whom you've not had a chance to meet very often, is a commissioner appointed last year. She's an attorney. She's got a 20-year history with FERC on oil pipelines. And so she served with FERC on all the Quality Bank hearings for the last 20 years. And in addition, any TAPS matters that helped what came before the commission, and she was an ALJ. She has an incredible background and is a very significant resource to us. And I am a CPA with a background in finance and management. This is a significantly accredited commission. I don't believe that there has been a commission with this much accreditation in the past. Most of you are aware of what our jurisdiction is. For those of you who aren't as familiar with the RCA, we oversee telecommunications, oil and gas pipelines that are common carrier in the state, natural gas utilities. You're familiar with the electric rail belt and the work that we do there, water and wastewater utility, provisionally certificated utilities, garbage utilities, and we also assist AEA in the program, PC program administration. So we have...
Senator Dice?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Senator Dice.
Okay. At some point here, would you briefly explain to us which are the regulated and which are the not regulated gas pipelines for the benefit of the committee?
Certainly.
At some point in your description or your discussion today.
Mm-hmm. The Mr. Chairman, if it's all right, I'll answer that now because I'm likely to forget. The RCA regulates all the gas pipelines now operating in Cook Inlet. We recently accepted a stipulation on the Cook Inlet gas gathering system to come under regulation, and that means that by now we have regulated, I believe, all but one. So that's the extension of our regulation of gas pipelines. When the spur line, which is on your mind a great deal, comes down, we also will regulate that. We regulate intrastate shipments on pipelines, oil or gas. We do not regulate inter-unit pipelines. Those are gathering lines, and so we do not regulate those. We also regulate TAPs.
Yeah, so then, if I may, any pipelines that were constructed in the future that take care of, say, our royalty share for in-state use, that would be in your kingdom?
Through the chair, we will regulate any intrastate shipments.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any other questions on our jurisdiction? Okay. I'm going to get right into RCA activities in terms of natural gas contracts with NSTAR. The RCA regulates the contracts that NSTAR negotiates through its tariff sheet 90, where its tariff sheet, which are the rules of the road for operations, the operating rules for this utility, requires that if they're going to enter a base supply contract, for which increases the average cost of gas, and by the end of today, that'll be a very familiar term to you, increasing the current average cost of gas, they have to come to us for approval. And there is a reason for that that we will discuss with you in a little bit. Any contract that they have which will decrease the current average cost of gas, they may put into effect immediately. So if there is some contract that they want to engage in, they have the ability to engage in that immediately as long as it doesn't increase the average cost of gas to the consumer.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, yes, Senator Green.
You know, in the time I've been here, I've not seen a presentation quite like this. And I just want to confirm that we're not going to get into anything that's going to put us then listening to the people who were before you and retrying this at this committee. I'm very concerned about the agenda. And, you know, I'll defer to you and your comfort level that this is not going to create a floodgate to come in here and have the two entities want to explain their side a little better?
Through the chair, I believe that it's a good idea for you to have any kind of public conversation with NSTAR Marathon. But the materials that I, because that's good public policy, the materials that I'm presenting today are information that's in the public that results from the hearing that we held. So it's all publicly available data. It is interesting data, and it's data that's been discussed to a degree in the orders that we've issued, including a concurring statement that I've issued. So I'm not going to say that NSTAR or Marathon or UNICAL or anyone won't be before you. I can't promise you that, Senator.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Gaird, we would prefer, the chair would prefer that we not go through the bowels of contract negotiations and all the ramifications. A much more macro perspective.
Certainly.
The process would be much more beneficial to us.
Compared to the lower 48, advance approval of contracts is unusual. Normally in the lower 48, there a gas utility will engage with a supplier, and then the regulatory commission looks at it in arrears for a reasonableness. Was the gas contract reasonable in the big picture? We have always approved NSTAR's gas contracts in advance. I think it's important to understand NSTAR's role in negotiation of contracts. NSTAR's focus is to secure supply. That's very critical. That's a very critical point. And the way that NSTAR's gas costs are set up is that NSTAR does not have a direct impact on the price of these contracts. They are interested in supply. They secure supply, but the price flows through. We allow them to flow the price through to the ratepayer. And the ratepayers pay all costs associated with that negotiation. So they'll pay the costs of NSTAR engaging in the negotiation. They'll come to us for approval of those costs as well. It's very similar to try to understand and to communicate to you the, one of the reasons that we look at it. It's because NSTAR is very much in the role of someone doing doing a duty like a neighbor going out and securing you a vehicle. They're going to go out and do their best job getting you a vehicle, but they're going to bring it home and put it in your driveway. So their interest is in securing the vehicle, and you're going to pay. Now, that's not a bad thing, because to have NSTAR have a financial commitment to also pay for this gas is something that is not done anywhere in the country. It's all flown through. But when you're understanding the negotiation and the reason that the RCA becomes involved in these contracts, it's because of that flow through. Someone needs to look at those contracts to make sure that they're reasonable when they're flowing through the price to the consumers. Are there any questions about that? It's important to know, because I think that sometimes people expect NSTAR to know a lot about the operations of the cook inlet producers, and I think that they're very knowledgeable, but they don't have information that's other than publicly available to them. So the information they know from working very closely with these companies for many years, but they do not have the kind of information that the producers hold when they go to negotiate the contracts. As a result of that, NSTAR frequently has been in the past in a challenging position, and I think it's described very well by Richard Barnes, who is a former 13-year president of NSTAR, in relationship to Cook Inlet as a whole and NSTAR's role in Cook Inlet and its negotiating role with the producers. I have a printout of Mr. Barnes's testimony, and he talks about how NSTAR is very frequently in a position of feeling that they don't have control over their future gas supplies because of the industrial use of these supplies. So So how does NSTAR determine when they need a gas supply? They do a 10-year forecast, and they present that forecast to us as justification for their contracts. Recently, NSTAR has modified, because of the warming trends in the weather, they've modified the way that they project their gas needs. We've looked at their gas needs versus their actual purchases, and from a projection standpoint, they're not that far off. This is the approval process. The contract is filed with the RCA. We take public comment. We investigate and open a docket. And the issue that we're looking at is, are the pricing terms reasonable for secure supply? Parties intervene because lots of parties in Cook Inlet have their own financial interests. In the Unocal contract, Marathon intervened to oppose it. The Attorney General intervened on behalf of the ratepayers. In this contract, Tesoro intervened with Marathon, and the Attorney General intervened, and a ratepayer intervened. So these are parties with financial interest that have an interest in the case and develop their own case to present to us. We have a hearing, and the hearing requires that NSTAR meets its burden of proof that there is reasonable pricing terms for the secured supply. Then we adjudicate that and ask the question, did NSTAR meet its burden of proof? And we make a final decision. This is not really so different than anything we do in the regulatory process. This is a very standard methodology for approving not only gas contracts, but any matter that comes before the RCA. I do want to point out to you the role of the Attorney General. The RCA is charged with making a balanced decision. The Attorney General intervenes to protect Alaskan ratepayer interests. So we have, in most cases where there's a significant number of ratepayers, the Attorney General will always come into our cases. This section of the presentation is about NSTAR's current contracts and the cost of gas that for your NSTAR customers. You have heard from several of your constituents that the price of gas has increased. This is a presentation slide that will show you that over the last roughly 3 years, the gas prices have increased by almost 81%.
If you could go back.
Certainly.
You said the gas prices have increased. That's in Cook Inlet for NSTAR?
This is the gas price for a residential user. NSTAR makes calculations and presents to us every time they change the price of gas, which is annually. They will tell us what an average family using 177 MCF of gas will pay. So this chart illustrates that in 2004, that family paid $854.13, and in 2007, that family is paying $1,547.59. And that is the reason that you're hearing your conversations from your constituents. The concern from the constituents is the change in price. The change in price that the constituents have seen is a result of several different factors. These numbers come from data that NSTAR files with us annually about the price of gas in Cook Inlet. They have several different contracts which have several different pricing mechanisms. They have one contract, APL4, which is priced on a base price. In 1988, it had a base price of $1.55, and it was adjusted annually for the last many years based on the change in the price of oil, light sweet crude oil futures. So when the contract was enacted, the price of light sweet was $18, and it was roughly in the 70s when NSTAR made this most recent calculation. So over time, you can see that price has increased. This Marathon's APL4 contract has a limit in it, which limits the amount that the price can go up every year. So it has a limiter. Even though it floats to a degree with the world price of oil, it's a limit to how much change can occur. That contract was limited this year and reduced the cost of gas roughly 60 cents, I believe. The Beluga contract is very similar to the Marathon contract, and it does not have a limiter. So it also moves with the price of light sweet crude, but it does not have a limiter on it. The Henry Hub is a 3-year Henry Hub pricing mechanism, which is a 36-month trailing average of the Henry Hub futures contract, contract one.
Senator Dyson.
And I assume the delta between Henry Hub and our prices that you allow here is the transportation cost?
The price that you receive is a combination, is a weighted average price. So these prices are what Unocal's paid $7.98. That includes transportation and taxes for the gas that it provides, the volumes that it provides to NSTAR. Beluga is the same. I think it provides 3 million. I think the next slide will show that. So they're paid according to the volumes that they provide. And then NSTAR does a weighting calculation, and they get a weighted average price. And that's the $7.02 that your ratepayers are paying this year. Did I answer your question, Senator Dyson?
You answered the question I should have asked.
Okay.
Not the one I did. And I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. You can see what's happening in between 2006, 2007, and 2008. And this is contributing to why you have a higher price now, why you have, this, the increase in 81%. It's not a single factor that causes that increase. It's multiple factors that are occurring at the same time. The first is this. Happening is that the first thing is Milwaukee. This was an Aurora gas. These volumes have stopped. This was relatively inexpensively priced gas, and that contract is in litigation right now because Aurora said it was uneconomic. The Beluga is the $6.33 price that you've seen, but it's got pretty small volumes. It's coming from the Beluga field. The Unocal contract, you'll see, which has the highest price that we're paying right now, the 3-year Henry Hub, is now crossed over the Marathon contract, which is the lower price, which is the lowest price gas that you receive. So you're paying not only for an increase in Henry Hub, but you're paying because Henry Hub is now becoming the predominant supplier. So there's multiple factors that are contributing in this year, which is why your ratepayers are seeing such a significant change this year. We don't believe that as the years go by, as this continues, the transition will be as significant. Are there any questions about that? This is to once again show you kind of the changes that have occurred in the pricing models. I think that NSTAR does a pretty good job of explaining the price of oil in here that's affecting these. You can see that the change is quite significant for these gas between 2004 and 2007. And that's $1.55 gas changing with the price of oil over 20 years. This has a limiter. It would have been more like this if it didn't have the limiter. And this is the Henry Hub.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator McGuire.
Through the chair, Ms. Jard, if I could ask, when you say a limiter, maybe you described this and I didn't pick up on it. What is that? What are the boundaries of that? That's number one. And then number two, I understand that's the Henry Hub price, but I have heard discussion about, and I don't know all of the facts, but if a company enters into a gas contract where that rate is significantly lower than the Henry Hub for a period of years, is that something that RCA takes into account as opposed to simply reflecting on the Henry Hub price?
I'll ask, through the chair, I'll ask you to repeat your second question, because I have the answer to your first.
Okay.
I had to get to my cheat notes. The contract for Marathon is limited by a clause in their contract section, and that contract says that it cannot go higher than 20% of the change. It cannot go higher than 20%, and then I believe 15% over whatever the change is. So there's a limiter in the contract, and if I spend a second, I could read the actual language to you. It defines, and it was established, I assume, so that it would protect the ratepayers from very strong, significant jumps as a result of the price of oil. And I can give you that section of the contract, Senator McGuire.
Okay. Senator McGuire.
And then through the chair, and I would appreciate that, and I'm curious about it. And then, so just my second question, and I'm sorry I'm not being specific, but I understand that there's a difference in the Henry Hub price index, but I understand that a lot of that is a result of Hurricane Katrina and other unforeseen acts of God that didn't necessarily affect our region per se. And my question is, so does RCA look at the Henry Hub price index even if, let's say, NSTAR or another company supplying gas had a gas contract in place with a set dollar amount that they were getting that gas at that was significantly lower than the Henry Hub price? Is there a consideration on the part of RCA for that? Because that's something that I'm hearing from constituents.
Okay. Through the chair, let me go back to the, let me look at Henry Hub. I have a Henry Hub contract for you. Okay. This is the Henry Hub 36-month, which NSTAR provides to us in terms of when they file their annual gas cost adjustment with us. This is the impact on Henry Hub of the hurricanes, the acts of God. Hurricane Rita and Katrina occurred in August and September, and the increases carried on basically through, they were coming down in January. So this is the time period that you're addressing. We would not modify, and we have not modified, the Henry Hub for those acts of God. The contract allows a 36-month trailing calculation, and that is the calculation that went into effect on the January 1st, 2007.
Okay.
I'm not really sure about others having gas available at a lower fixed price. NSTAR has contracts which are approved mainly with the big producers. The only small producer was Aurora, and that contract became uneconomic. I understand that many others would like to provide gas to NSTAR. Trading Bay, for example, was in this current case, and they asked us to move 10% of NSTAR supply to the side and allow that to be sold or produced by smaller utilities. And we did not address that issue in this hearing. Will that give you enough information to answer your constituents' concerns about why the gas prices or the nature of the contracts that have occurred?
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Kate, I really appreciate this information. I certainly heard lots of discussion around this table that one of the reasons we weren't seeing an increase in exploration and development of gas-producing structures in Cook Inlet was just the price. And I understood that there was some pressure here over the last couple of years to allow some of these prices to float with the Henry Hub, with the view in mind of it giving an incentive for further development. Would you comment on that, please? Is that why the Unocals
votes
to the
through the chair, the incentive when NSTAR provided agreed to the contract with the Unocal, what NSTAR was looking for was a new provider, Marathon, in 1995, and that's why it's the history of NSTAR's negotiations in Cook Inlet is very interesting. Marathon had a contract with NSTAR, and in 1995, NSTAR asked Marathon for 400 BCF of gas, billion cubic feet, about 17 years worth of gas, I think, for NSTAR. And in 1995, Marathon, according to NSTAR's former president, told NSTAR, no, we're not going to sell it to you. We're going to sell that gas to the Japanese. And so they told them to go find a different supplier. NSTAR looks at and analyzes, this data when it goes to look for a supplier. And this data comes from the 2004 natural gas study and was placed in our record. What this indicates, and I think that this is what NSTAR looks at very frequently, is the decline that you see in reserves in Cook Inlet. And this is about 1995, right here. So NSTAR was told, go find some other gas, go find another provider. NSTAR set about to do that. And looking at these down lines, NSTAR becomes very, very concerned because it does not hold the data, the plans of the producers in Cook Inlet. It negotiates based on what information it has and what's publicly available, which is reserves are declining. Mm-hmm. So what it was sincerely, I believe, looking for was a need to go out and encourage, and what it told us it wanted to do was encourage exploration. And in order to encourage exploration, it said that it needed to pay prices that were competitive with that which was in the lower 48, which you were getting from Henry Hub in the lower 48. So NSTAR turned to the lower 48 market and probably with some help from the producers that it was negotiating with and said, look, you want us to go out and explore, we need to be able to tell the guys in the lower 48 who are running our business that we're going to get competitive prices. And that was the genesis, I believe, of the idea of the Henry Hub, which is in the public record in the docket. So that's why Henry Hub came before the commission. The Attorney General at the time did not support the use of the Henry Hub. His recommendation was a wellhead price, primarily because the Henry Hub includes transportation and taxes already in the price. So one of the reasons that we rejected the Marathon contract this time was because, again, we said Henry Hub has transportation and taxes included, and we're not going to pay ask Alaskan ratepayers to pay over and above. So at the time, the Attorney General recommended the wellhead price, the U.S. wellhead price, average wellhead. The RCA found that found the burden of proof that NSTAR had met it, and that their case was persuasive and allowed the contract to go forward under Henry Hub.
If I might continue, Mr. Chair. So we indeed were hoping that an increased price would incent more investment. How long has that been in place, and do we have any evidence that more exploration or development is happening, Kate?
The record that we had and the decision that we made stated that there was no, I think we restated it once, no noticeable net increase in the reserves as a result of the Henry Hub contract. Hmm. And that finding was based on an analysis of testimony in the record where they said that, you know, in the year that they were presenting this to us in 2006, there was not going to be an increase in the net reserves, and they are still, net reserves were still going down. So we looked at this, we analyzed the, on one hand, Henry Hub is quite expensive for Cook Inlet. Is it the right market was what the issue we're looking at, and I'm going to talk to you about that very soon. And we said, you know, there is no net increase in reserves. So then we looked at this, we analyzed the 2004 study, And the 2004 study that you probably have all received information on actually tells you what drives exploration and development, or it hypothesizes for you what the factors are that contribute to exploration and development in Cook Inlet. And it says it in a couple sentences, and so it's quite easy to pass it by. But what it does say, and what was very interesting to us, was that in this whole history, the early 80s all the way through, 40 years actually, from 8 TCF on down, there's only two times, actually three, in the entire history of Cook Inlet where there have been substantial reserves added. This, 1987, and this, and 1996 and 1997. Two times. This is a substantial volume of gas. This is 1.4 million, billion, a trillion cubic feet. It's hard for me to get that high. Trillion cubic feet, 1.4 trillion cubic feet. And so when we were studying the 2004 study, we wondered why do these bumps happen? What causes this? And the 2004 study just says very casually, these increases occurred roughly at the same time when the LNG export license was up for renewal. So, in the record, the parties had put the LNG contract and the extension and the request for the extension so that we could see what the market forces were in Cook Inlet and make our decisions about the markets. And that's what this correlates to, and we mentioned that in our order. Because we had to compare the benefit and the detriment of having Henry Hub, was it the right market for Alaska, to what the past has told us drives exploration, or there's a correlation. We didn't have ConocoPhillips on the stand. We didn't ask Marathon on the stand. This was in the 2004 DOE report. So this correlation is interesting.
Senator Stedman.
So can we expect that to happen again the next time they renegotiate?
Through the chair, I think that that's an appropriate question to ask ConocoPhillips and Marathon. I mean, in the evidence placed in the record, in the current record that's in the public, is that Marathon has been engaged in exploration and development activities since 2002. Marathon provided in the confidential record indications of reserves. They had to provide that to NSTAR. So those are not questions that are in our record. The only information that I can provide to you is information that we base our decisions on in this record and in prior records that'll provide you with some information to make your own decisions on what the proper market is for the pricing of NSTAR's natural gas contracts.
Senator Barr.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Girard, and only answer to the extent that you can. So I think for us and our constituents, the concern is the shortage of supply. And we know that, or at least we believe in the next 2 years, that supply is going to go down significantly to a point that might be dangerous. And so I have not read the full opinion yet. I need to. But is there any kind of guiding message or authority to NSTAR in terms of its future negotiations? Because the one thing that I think about is that you went through your rationale and so forth, and if I were that company, I would want to have a takeaway message about what I could do, because I think it took many years in the negotiations. What am I going to do to negotiate some gas sale contracts that are going to work? And so if you're able to do that, again, I don't want you to cross any lines that you're not able to. I'd like to hear, what is that takeaway message? What are we looking for in a contract that would work for our constituents?
The RCA, in its role, cannot, through the chair, they do that to me when I'm sitting back there and I forget to do it for you, through the chair. Senator, the RCA did not, in the order, provide specific guidance to NSTAR as to how to price its future contracts. They sought guidance from us, and we thought about, but we declined to give them guidance. We declined to give them guidance because we need to be able to make a decision on whatever it is that they bring to us. So I have put out a concurring statement. The dissenting, this is a decision made by a majority. We've given you the dissenting statements. And through that process, NSTAR will have information. There is a little bit more information which leads to why those increases likely occurred. A lot of the discussion in this record and in prior records is about how do you determine what market benchmarks to use for Cook Inlet? How do you set prices that are going to attract the local producers to sell to NSTAR and the utilities as compared to their other alternatives? And when you settle down in your own market and you understand some of the drivers of that market, you realize, well, we didn't lose 400 BCF to Henry Hub. They didn't take it away from us. They didn't negotiate better than we were able to negotiate. What you find is that the market driver is very much, and Marathon's alternative source of revenue is the export of LNG. So you settle in your own market and you understand and you look at that. NSTAR's ratepayers can afford to pay the highest costs of gas that anyone pays in this market. And as long as whatever they pay is reasonable in relation to what the alternatives are for this market, then the ratepayers can understand the connection. What we hear and why one of the reasons we could not support the Henry Hub contract is that there's really no connection between the lower 48, Henry Hub, and Alaska. There are no connections. The gas can't go there. The gas goes across the North Pacific Ocean to Japan. And if Marathon is going to sell gas to an alternative to the utilities, it's going to be to the LNG market. So that, at the end of the day, is the market that NSTAR needs to turn to. And they know that. Ex-President Barnes knew that he had to be competitive with that market or he was going to lose volumes.
If I might, the question of storage of gas. Could you just bring to our attention what your role, if you have a role, in the storage of gas and how it kicks into the system, or is that transparent to you?
Mr. Chairman, the RCA does not currently regulate any storage on Cook Inlet. I have talked in the public about the possibility of regulating storage in Cook Inlet because storage may be considered a total system of pipe, and we have statutory jurisdiction over a total system of pipe. Storage is regulated in the lower 48. We have not exercised jurisdiction over the storage facilities in Cook Inlet. The Unocal contract was presented to the RCA with storage kind of embedded in the pricing. One of the reasons that the Unocal contract was attractive, and it's in the order that the commission issued, was because Unocal was going to provide storage to meet NSTAR's winter peaking needs.
Ms. Gaillard, it's 5 minutes till we got started a little late. I would ask that you make your points that you want to make to us up front, and then we can revisit things potentially. And Senator Dyson.
Thank you. Did you mean to infer that the LNG export is a market that is comparable to Henry Hub prices, less transportation?
Through the chair, the Japanese market, the Japanese contract that the ConocoPhillips and Marathon have is tied to the world oil prices, the oil prices in Japan. And so the prices of LNG delivered from Cook Inlet are on the screen behind you. And they are available from the Department of Energy. And that is the delivered price of Cook Inlet natural gas converted to LNG and shipped. So it's delivered to Japan. And there is not a direct relationship between these prices and the Henry Hub at this time, because there is an indirect relationship, because the Henry Hub also increases when the price of oil increases.
Yeah. So what, if I may, the inference I got was that NSTAR selling gas into domestic, state domestic market has to compete with what Conoco and Unocal or whoever could sell to the Japanese with, so that the Japanese market ends up being a default floor under our gas market.
Through the chair, for Marathon and ConocoPhillips only.
Yeah.
And that is only through the evidence that was presented by Mr. Barnes in the last hearing.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The final points that I wish to make to you was to provide you an understanding of why prices have increased in Cook Inlet, to let you know who I am, and if your constituents have further questions, they're welcome to contact the RCA. Oh, one other question. I wanted to point out to you that there's a wealth of information about Cook Inlet on the Department of Energy's website. When you take a look at Cook Inlet, it's very helpful to look at Cook Inlet in a grander sense. Cook Inlet as compared to what's happening in the lower 48. And this information from DOE that DNR certainly has access to, compared to what's going on in the lower 48, will give you a perspective of Cook Inlet that is quite interesting. Tony wanted me to point that out. We rejected the Marathon contract because we did not find that the Henry Hub price, 1 year or 36 month, was reasonable, a reasonable exchange for the secure supplies. The contract had a $15 cap. So you're paying right now in the market $7.02. This would be the price that a family would pay at $15 per MCF. Jeez. The world in the lower 48 would need to come apart, hopefully, before gas ever rose to $15 per MCF. Nevertheless, you cannot look at a contract for Alaska that has that price capability compared to what the alternatives are for the Alaska market. Anything?
Questions? Comments? Senator Dyson?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for letting me sit here. A really seminal question for all of us is to know what are the proven and possible reserves in South Central Alaska in the Cook Inlet area. And there's an inference that I've derived from that, and we heard it here last time this committee met, that we don't know. And there have not been the economic drivers to get the explorers out there to find out. And before we invest a lot of money in building a spur line or a bullet line, getting a handle around what are the potential reserves in Cook Inlet at what gas price and how long they will last us. I commend you for getting started with these two hearings. Get us started on getting a handle on a huge piece of information that all of us need to know, and thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, to just piggyback on top of Senator Dyson's comments, you know, DNR right now, in my assumption, is in the lead to getting a gas pipeline for the state of Alaska. They also hold the answers to the questions that Senator Dyson was talking about, the reserves in Cook Inlet. I mean, they're the overseer of that to some degree, was shared with some others. And that's part of what we envision as a committee to be able to look at as closely as possible. It's an unknown. You know, you're in it professionally, the business, it's an unknown. But to the extent, before we make huge investments, to get a volume to market here, we need to have, in my estimation, a much better feel for what we have in Cook Inlet that, based on the economics of Cook Inlet, we can extract and you can regulate. Thoughts on that?
Our position really is to comment to you on materials that have been presented to us in a record. You know, I am no different than any citizen if I take data and bring it over to you and try to make conclusions on it, if it has not been subject to, you know, the appropriate cross-examination in our hearing process. That's why, Senator Green, I was not too uncomfortable presenting the information that we presented today, because it's really a distillation of all the evidence that's been filed before us. I wish you well in your task, but our house is a bit smaller than that. We really are focused on the jurisdictional areas of gas utilities.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for your presentation.
You're welcome.
And apologize for us being delayed for about 30 minutes. We had a meeting we had to go to on the same subject, just a little different focus. So with that,
thank you.
This committee will adjourn.